Welcome to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. Good to have you back. This week we have a guest with us named Faust Ruggiero. Welcome to our show, Faust.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the offer. I'm really thrilled to get going.
I see that you've written a book called The Fix Yourself Handbook.
I have. It's something that's been in the works for about 4 years, and we finally published it in December 2019, so it's doing real well, and so I'm real thrilled about it.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the book and about your work?
Sure. I've been counseling for about just a little over 40 years now, lots of different places in the initial going, come out of grad school. I've done everything from inpatient facilities to prisons to deaf kids and geriatrics. So about 30 years ago, I went to private practice. And as you're, as I'm going through things and weeding out what works and doesn't, it became pretty apparent that a lot of the what I call the processes of living were lacking. Weren't there. They weren't well developed in the clients I was seeing. So I put together a program to deal with it. As I used it, I adopted the process way of life. But essentially, all it's talking about is using the processes we all have inside us, things we should be using every day, and getting back to that and applying those in our lives. And then the book is really the written text about how that operates.
Well, great. It's so wonderful. We have some time together today, and obviously we're really focusing on helping people to heal and grow and realize a life of love. How does your approach, what would you like most to sort of teach our listeners about this?
You know, the book is written, Mike, as a journey, and it's really a journey from people that are conflicted and hurt and maybe angry or fearful, and moving them through that journey using all the processes, and it actually is designed to get them to what I call pure love, which is just a point where everything in the system is balanced. We're balanced physically, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually. We get to that point, then we can really realize what pure love feels like, what good love feels like. So reading the text is really a movement from not feeling good, feeling hurt and confused, to a point where you can understand how to like yourself and like the environment you're creating, that whole life you're creating. And that's where, in my mind, what really creates the ability to love oneself.
Absolutely. So you really help people who are feeling wounded and in pain with your method to a place where they're feeling better about themselves, it sounds like, that allows them to then be able to realize a life of love.
And that's exactly what I'm doing. You know, my own bias is that before we can do anything outwardly, we really got to get inside ourselves and repair what's there and feel good about who we are on the inside. I believe everything goes from the inside out. I mean, there's a reciprocity. You know, we
yeah. So the fix is really about a healing of inner injury. Is that right?
It is. It's healing that, and it's also defining, what the power is inside us. The first step is to heal. Obviously, maybe go back and get some of the past pains and all those sorts of things. But then it's really to define, and that's where I start my people. Let's define where you are right now. Because until we define that, we don't really have a jumping off platform, a place to move forward. So let's define what that is, and then we want to kind of take life, as I say, take it off autopilot, so you're not just following the crowd and doing things without thought. Let's put some conscious energy into there and start directing where you want to go and start creating that life you want to live.
Wonderful. So walk us through then the fix. Tell us more about this process of looking within and healing and living sort of a more intentional life going forward.
Sure. You know, most of the people, and I'm sure you know this in your own practice, people come to us when they feel broken, when they say, okay, this is not working, I'm unhappy. Once in a while I get someone that comes in and they just want to start tweaking things, but most of the time people are feeling as though they don't know where to go. So that's where I say we start identifying where they are. When I say identifying, we're gonna just kind of look at where life is, present what the issues are, define those issues, and then we start to move forward. And that's what I say, take life off autopilot. then we start getting into the initial processes that, that I want people to work with. And for me, those the three or four that I call kind of the bookends, the initial bookends, the chapters that you start with, which is the huge one, is slowing down life. I mean, people, we go so fast, we don't put a lot of thought into what we're doing. We don't question what we're doing. We follow along. We try to fit in, you know, and we're fitting in, trying to fit in with other people before we really fit in with ourselves, so to speak. So I want them to just slow down first. And that doesn't mean, you know, go to a crawl, but that just means give yourself enough time to think about what you're doing. Make those thoughts conscious as opposed to just getting up and going through your routine day. You know, I'll tell people, I'll ask people, how are you doing today? And they say, well, another day, same as yesterday, you know, different day. They say things like Groundhog Day and all that kind of stuff. And I want them to be able to look at themselves first and decide what they want to do each day. So we're going to do some goal setting. We're going to do some, you know, ridding some toxic energy. But we're going to start by slowing everything down so we can do that, because nothing changes when we're going fast.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So the first step in terms of living an intentional, thoughtful life is to slow down and check in and maybe set some goals and be very thoughtful and intentional from a place of reflection, rather than being, like you said, on autopilot. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, we know from learning theory that the brain's ability to learn, it, a lot of that's based upon repetition over time. So, you know, often I'll show people, well, this is what you've been doing. You know, these are all the negative things. These are the things you've been repeating over and over. It's your routine, and it's really working against you. And what we want to do is create a positive way to live life. We want to give your brain the ability to learn positive things over time. So, you know, we need to slow down in order to do that so you can think about what you're doing, not only in terms of what you have to do, but in the way you have to apply that.
Can you give an example of that first step of slowing down in terms of sort of a positive goal or intention that you've used with a client recently?
Many. You know, I have an example. I have a woman who's coming in, and she's been a victim of spousal abuse for years. And this particular person is not, it's not physical. It's a lot of emotional stuff. And she has internalized that. So her language is always negative. It's always, I can't do, or I'm not worthy of this, or no one's going to like me, I won't succeed, that sort of thing. But she doesn't even realize she's doing it, because life goes so fast. There are three kids in the picture. Both of them have to work, you know, taking care of a home, and now we're in this whole virus situation. So her life just goes fast all the time, and she's really in survival mode more than anything else. So, you know, when she came in, we looked at it, and we see where the starting block needed to be. We really needed to address that abuse situation. But before we could get there, I needed her to slow down a bit and not be worrying about how to please him next or how to fix this situation next, because as she was doing that, she's really losing herself in the process. So we slowed some things down and get some conscious energy in the picture, some mindfulness, if you will. And I have her looking at her life in more honest terms, because that's the second part of this. Once you slow down, you're going to do some fact-finding, and you're going to be a little bit more honest with yourself. And that information is necessary to start moving forward.
Is that the sort of the second principle of inquiry for you, that you of your four
it
main
is,
principles,
you know,
is
I call
inquiry,
it brutal,
fact-finding?
Mm-hmm. I actually call the next process brutal honesty. I want, you know, it's a hard
one.
It's one of the hardest concepts to, and that's why I thought, you know what, it's not that we want to abuse ourselves, but we have to, honesty, for me, when I'm counting, even in my own life, is, you know, I want to be able to question myself and say, okay, am I getting to the right things here? And if I'm keeping myself comfortable, which is the brain's function, is to keep us safe and comfortable, you know, I'm probably missing some of those facts, and I don't want to miss those if I need them to move forward. So I'm going to teach them some methods to get really honest, you know, relieve yourself of defense mechanisms, things like that, and get to the real honest facts. So when we move forward, what we're moving forward is with really, really solid, good factual information. And, it, you know, I call it brutal honesty, but we generally get there. It's just learning how to weed through all that discomfort that comes with being honest, which is a result of being protective and dishonest for so many years.
Yeah, what comes up for me as you're saying that, Thomas, is this idea of inquiry into what's really painful, really into the center of our pain. And that can feel pretty brutal when you do that, no?
It can, but you know, and people will say that, but when they start to realize that when they go deep inside, that's where all the beauty is that they've covered up with maybe the lies or the survival tactics, the tools that we need to use just to get through our days. So when you go in and you start weeding out all that negative information and get to that stuff that could hurt, you also find that little internal child, if you will, that person inside you that has all the good stuff too, because that's where we hide them. We hide the person in there. We're afraid to take that person out because, you know, we're gonna experience more pain. So you're gonna go in and find some pain, but you're also gonna go in and find some really good things about yourself.
Right. They talk about sort of the gold beneath the covering of clay, right?
Absolutely.
So I have one thing is to slow down and be mindful and really sort of set up the conditions for deep inquiry. And the second one you call fact-finding or brutal honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, and in looking, then you see and you discover and you learn. Wonderful. And then is there a third principle after
Yeah,
that?
There is. It's in the book, it's one of those things you dub something. I've dubbed it I over E, which is really intellect over emotion. And I don't want them to not use their emotions. I just want them to learn how to put their intellect, their ability to judge, assess what's going on in their lives before their emotions. You know, it's that take a step back, catch your breath, and look at what's going on kind of way of looking at things. When my people are going to express their emotions, I want them to express them over the facts. I always use I've used the example of the pandemic when it was announced and everyone went into a frenzy and then someone went on television and said, get your paper products in order and we know what flew off the shelf. And that was all that emotion that came. My God, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to be in the house. I'm not going to have what I need. Or if we just could just slow down, let's take a look at the facts. Let's get our intellects in the picture first. And then when we're going to emote, let's emote over facts. And there may be some scary things there, but let's make sure those scary things are realistic. So I want them to work with their minds first, and then emote later. And that's, again, it's a hard principle. It's a hard concept to teach. But people, once they see it work in some of the simple things in their lives, they know they can do it. We see some real changes when that happens.
Is this kind of like the idea of sort of cognitively grounding yourself in some facts about, for example, your basic safety? Or what kind of facts do you want people to sort of ground themselves in order to be able to hold their emotional experience?
The facts are really consistent with that, whatever situation is happening. Your spouse brings something home that you don't like, some type of information. Something goes wrong at work, whatever it may be. All I want them to do, situation by situation, is to say, let me just take a step back and let's assess what the facts are. You know, I may have to ask questions. I mean, okay, I'm not sure what you mean by that. What happened? What do I need to do? What are you concerned about? Let's get the facts, because I think what happens is when something occurs in our lives, we quickly go into a kind of an emotional reaction. We may or may not express it, but emotions go first. Then we try to tear through it with our minds. If we can kind of reverse that just a little bit and get our minds into play, and become good at that. And that's just a rehearsal thing. Something happens, and what I ask them to say is, okay, let me take a step back here. Make it conscious, because, you know, when we're changing behavior, conscious learning is necessary. So I may ask them to say something. Let me take a step back here. Let me get the facts. Let me look at what I have to do. And when they start doing that, they're actually, at that very moment, what they've done is slowed the process down already. They've already put their intellects in it. And their emotions had to take a back seat for a moment, and they don't realize that that's occurring. But, you know, it's those little tricks that we play that allow us to engage our brain just before our intellect. Let's just get that there before we start reacting to something.
Mm, That's great. Yeah, it sounds a little bit like you're slowing down and fact-finding steps. I over East almost sounds like a little bit of a combination of those two steps.
Well, you know, it's like anything else. You learn them separately, but then you use them simultaneously. Once you become proficient, you know, it all just triggers at one time. The event occurs. You instead of going very fast, which is the initial reactions when the emotions take over, you consciously go slow, allow your brain to ask some questions, and then begin to devise at least a situational plan. Now, that's conscious in the beginning. Once you learn that, it kind of just happens. You're right. It all moves together.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you give our listeners sort of an example of I over E, applying that. It's sort of something concrete that people can grab hold of.
Sure. The simplest example is any person you're in a relationship with, and that could be a friend, it could be a child or a mother or a spouse or significant other, whatever, that person either does something or says something to you that really sparks the emotions. It could be something that causes you to be angry or fearful, or you know, you're not sure what's going to go on. You maybe feel a little threatened, and you're ready to react. That reaction could be, I'm afraid. It could be I'm angry. I want to run. I want to attack. It could be all those things that happen when we get that way. But if you hear what it is you're experiencing, whatever that is, and you say to yourself, wait a minute, let me slow down, let me understand what's going on, let me get all the facts, and then move forward on that, that's a lot easier than when the person says or does something and you say, what, I can't believe you did that, all those kind of things, all that negative language starts coming out, which really has no functional value. But if you take a step back and in your own mind say, okay, I need facts here. I need to slow down. I need to look at what he or she is saying and make sure I understand all of that. Because you know what happens? We react, and then later on, as we're arguing it through, as the argument takes place, we say, we didn't say that before, or I didn't understand that part of it. We want to get all through that, as much of that up front as we can. Then we're responding more efficiently than just an emotional reaction.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, so often we can get triggered and have a negative emotional reaction, like you want to do that, and like you said, react with either fear or anger. And what you're saying, if I hear you right, is to do your slow down and backbinding steps on the moment, and seek to deeply understand, so that you can then respond thoughtfully rather than react emotionally in a way that may be hurtful.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing, the thing I love so much about the approach is that when you start doing that, you begin to, it's the initial steps of learning to like yourself better, because you're not angry. You know, those of us that don't like all these arguments, when we get pulled into one or we feel we're pulled into one, we don't like ourselves in that moment. And oftentimes when the argument is done, we walk away, you know, maybe mad at the other person, but then we're angry at ourselves for behaving that way. And when we start changing those things around, we start to like ourselves. We start to like the world that we're creating internally and even a little bit on the outside. And that is the first step, in my mind, in learning how to love ourselves.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that is a first step. You know, the way I think about this, House, is that I do a little trick with my patients sometimes, which is that, like you're saying, if you want to feel lovable, do loving things, because when you respond with love, right, then you feel more lovable. If you're more loving, you feel more lovable. And ultimately, in an absolute realm, we want to get to a point where we feel that we're unconditionally lovable. But this is a good step to get there by doing loving things, right?
It is. You know, I'm one of these folks. I mean, that's a kind of practical person. When people, you know, I've seen so much of this in the literature, loving yourself and all these, you know, things that people want us to do, but no one's putting that roadmap out there. So what I'm really doing with this book is I wanted to answer those questions. How? I get people, you know, in the office, and they'll say, okay, everybody's telling me to do this, love myself, you know, be kind, but I'm not sure how to do this. So what I did is in every chapter, at the end of the chapter, I provide the exact steps they can use that can get them to apply the principles of that chapter and then prepare themselves to move to the next one. That's the part of self-help literature I thought was missing.
No, this is really, very, really, really good, Faust, this idea of of I over E, slow down, inquire, what is this, seek to understand, and then respond in a thoughtful, loving way rather than reacting emotionally. And then you do feel better about yourself when you're loving, and you do feel badly when you're harmful. So
exactly.
This makes good sense.
And you know, when you start to do this and you feel that you're becoming more proficient about doing it, you really start to like yourself so much more. And then what you do is you're motivated to keep doing it. It's almost like exercise. You know, I used to do 5 push-ups. Now I can do 20. I feel good about myself and I want to do more. And once we see that we have that ability inside us that we can like what we're doing, we want others to see that. And now you're talking about internal coming external, where we really want to show the world that we can do it. And oftentimes they're willing to give that back to us.
Yeah, that makes us good sense. This is great. Let's take a little break and then come back after the break. You're listening to How to Love with Dr. Mike and our guest, Faust Ruggiero. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike and our guest, Faust Ruggiero. Tell us a little bit more. You've told us about sort of slow down and fact-finding and applying those in an integrated way with your intellect over emotion approach. Is there a fourth step of sort of this fix that you have?
Well, again, those are the steps that get us going.
Yes.
And then I talk about a process that I use, they're going to use in every chapter in the book and in their lives. I wanted to provide a formula, if you will, something simple that people could constantly keep in their minds and train them to do all the steps in the program and deal with life that way. And I should say, I haven't said this yet, but everything that I'm doing is what we already have inside us. There's nothing that I present that someone I would hope would look at and say, wow, I've never heard anything like that before. What I wanted people to say was, okay, I've heard those things, I just didn't know how to apply them. So I wanted to give them a procedure, and it's something very simple. I just call it present, understand, and fix. And being a clinician, as you both and I are, we know that's what we do in counseling. People will come in, they will present a problem to us. We're not looking for a definition right away. We just want to say, what's going on? What do you think is wrong? Again, they may say, well, I think my marriage is breaking up, or they may say I'm depressed, or whatever it may be. Just give me that first. So we have the problem. Then the next step is to understand it, which again is what we do in counseling. Let's go find out who the players are. Let's go see. Let's talk about your timeline. Let's go back and forth and see. Let's get all that information, and which is what you heard me talk about in the first couple steps. We need information now, so we're going to get some. We're going to do some fact finding, and then we're going to get to the point once we have that information that we're going to put together some type of a plan to move forward. And so I just say, if you can remember those three words, present, understand, fix, or go into action, then you can apply everything that I'm saying in the book, because that's how we're going to do it. And, you know, and that actually came through my counseling, where people would say, you know, you taught me how to present stuff to understand it, and then I went and put together a plan for myself. And then, you know, light bulbs went on for me. I'm doing this over and over again. This is the way we do things. At least the way I do things in counseling. So I want to let people know, if you do that in every aspect of your life, that is how you have come to address every situation that you'll ever experience.
Very, very good. Okay. And how would you, again, give an example of, so after you learn these tools of slowing down, mindfulness, inquiry, brutal honesty, applying this in the moment when you're emotionally aroused, how would you apply this formula, present, understand, and fix? Maybe give our listeners some examples of applying this to their difficulties, their life difficulties.
Sure. Again, we can go right back to, again, someone in your life does something. Let's say you're at a party with a significant other, and that person seems to be flirting with someone. Maybe the eyes are, you know, giving an extended look, maybe there's a smile, and you're not so sure about what's going on. The typical thing people do is they might say, you know, knock it off, or I think you like that person, or why are you doing that, and what's wrong with me, and all the questions start. Whereas if you look at it in your mind and say, okay, what's the problem here? My significant other is looking at that other person. You can begin to take, again, you're going to take a step back, and you're going to start getting some information. Now, you've already presented the problem. He or she is looking at that person, and I'm feeling a little bit threatened. There's your problem. Okay, now what do you want to do next? You can react. You can argue. You can accuse them of things. Maybe they did this before, and that really bothers you. Or you can begin to get the information. The first piece of information you're going to get is exactly what you saw. And you're going to look from that point and say, all right, what do I want to do with this? I need some facts. I need to ask some questions. And you know, and in one of the chapters in the book I have is something called War of Confrontation. You don't want to almost verbally assault the person or accuse them. You want to just, you know, gently say, what's going on? Let's get some facts about this. I saw you. Do you know that person? You might say, or who is that? Oh, I don't know. I said, oh, because you were looking at that person a little longer, and I thought maybe you knew them. You know, there's a gentle way to get in there and start getting some questions going. And you're not reacting yet. You're at a point where you're just acquiring information. Maybe at the end of that at that time, you look and say, well, yeah, there is something going on, and you may have to deal with that. You're going to have a plan for that. Or through your information gathering, you may look at that and say, okay, I saw something, I reacted right away, and I'm okay with what's going on, we're good. But what you've done is you've slowed it down, you've applied your mind to it before you got emotional, you now are getting all the information to try to understand it, now you can, at that point, devise a way that you want to move forward.
So let's say your partner says, you know, you do an inquiry, maybe it's afterwards, you're on the way home, and you're being non-attacking and just inquiring. I really like that. And the person says, well, you know, I have to be honest with you. I did feel a little bit of attraction to them. Then what do you do?
And so now again, you're in a position where you're going to say, okay, I have to get some more information. Well, I was attracted. Well, what does that mean? I'm kind of a stickler for defining terms. Because you know, we say things and then we often let it go right there. And okay, well, I got the information. She was attracted to that person, and that means you know our relationship is threatened. And further inquiry may simply expose nothing more than well, it was a pretty person and you know young and you know yeah I was a little attracted, but I'm not going to do anything with that person. You know I may see another person and say, well, that's an attractive person too. I enjoyed you know. 3 seconds looking at that person longer than usual, you may get that, or you may get that there's something wrong in the relationship. But now you're at the next step, and you want to define, you know, you've got the initial piece of information. Yeah, well, I was kind of attracted. The question is, okay, what does that mean? Find that, and because you're going to need to do that anyway. And often we get all that information. We typically do, but often it's after an emotional outburst, and we may do more damage during that time than we need to. So it's hard, but we want to continue to keep ourselves as calm as possible and get more information. Have a conversation, a warm conversation. If it gets to the point that, you know, the disaster is going to hit, well, you're there. But we don't know that until we get the information.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And ultimately, like you said, these layers of inquiry, there may be what needs to be fixed at the root of that maybe is nothing, or maybe one needs to fix one's attitude or address one's own fear, or maybe there's a joint solution. Can you give some examples of what fix means? I mean, what do you do in a situation like that? What does it mean to fix that situation?
Mm-hmm. Fix really is. I go into the book. Fix is nothing more than to devise an efficient plan, a step-by-step plan, if you can, to get you where you need to go. Nothing more. You get the information. Now, really, what you're saying is, what am I going to do with this? And then you're going to put the steps together to get to that point. Nothing more than that. It's not a you're broken or some huge thing that has to be done. It's simply let's devise a plan so that we can move forward, because once we get the information, typically we're going to act on that in some fashion. And sometimes acting on it means we don't have to do anything at all. We look at it and say, you know what, some minor tweaking and we're okay, but sometimes it means that there's a more masterful plan that needs to be involved. But it's nothing more than devising a plan and then working the steps to execute that plan.
So with your client who is being psychologically abused by her partner, mm-hmm. Has she gone through this process of present, understand, and fix?
She has.
How has she gone about understanding this relationship and fixing it?
You know what? The interesting thing with her, what she came to, what she says, I finally got to what I wanted to say, and I'm glad. I was really happy because she got there without me saying it. She says, I can't do anything about him until I do something about me. I don't have to stay there. I would love to for our family, for our children, our home, but I have to make a decision down the road. I'm not ready to do that. I have to get stronger inside. I have to stop believing what he's saying. I have to be able to create my world and understand me for who I am, and I'm not able to do that as long as I'm believing what he says and I'm doing everything just to help us survive. I need to get stronger first. So she really, really brought it back to herself first. That was her first step in the process.
Okay. And how has she gone about, if you will, coming up to that place of not taking him personally? How is she, has she just done that through this inquiry process?
Yeah, well, no, actually, that also was part of the counseling. Part of her plan was to continue to come to counseling, but what we did when we really went in and looked at her family timeline, Dad had a bit of a drinking problem. When he did drink, he would be abusive. She really learned how to survive through that abuse, her and her mother. And, you know, so she followed her mother's cues. And then, as we often see, went into a relationship with someone who did the same things and knew exactly what to do with him, she thought, when she met him. But as it typically does, you enable some things and you let some things go, and they continue to mature and develop. And that's, she was nurturing the wrong things. So we went back and saw, okay, there's a reason why she accepted that behavior, and she felt that she could survive through it, and somehow she was going to fix it, which she attempted to do with her father. So we went and got all that information. That's part of what we do. That people want people to get the information themselves if they can, but if we need help, we need to enlist the help of other people who can help us weed through some of that old stuff.
Yeah, so you engaged her in a process of deep inquiry into these patterns that had been formed in her very early life.
Absolutely.
And gave her some insight and awareness how she was repeating those with her current husband.
Exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, well, let's take a brief break again. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike, with our guest Faust Ruggiero, and we're talking about his process for basically fixing the difficulties in our lives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike and with our guest, Faust Ruggiero. Faust, we've been talking a lot about this method for inquiry and mindfulness and responding intelligently, developing a deep understanding of difficulties so that they can then be fixed or corrected. After you've begun to do this process, I hear that there's a lessening of pain, there's more intentionality, there's a lessening of conflict. And what's beyond that? Where do people go to continue to realize a life of love after that?
I think the first thing I would say is to keep in mind that life is a journey, and that every day is really what we're working on. We're trying to get away from those grandiose destinations and make every day of our life good. So we apply processes like this all the time. When we do that, we start to like the fact that we're doing it. We become proficient. We feel positive energy. We're talking to ourselves differently because that internal language is huge. And then we start moving in directions where we start to get to the higher order processes, as I call them. Now we're really working with our humility. We're working with gratitude from the inside, not just something that you're happy it happened, that you're thankful someone did something for you or something you got. Your gratitude is in there all the time, and it actually comes from the inside, and you're grateful for all the moments of your life, and you're wrapping that around your world. You become very passionate about the way you live life, not just, again, huge things. passionate about the moments going by in your life. When you're doing that, you start to realize that how much you like your life, and that's where I think love comes from, that self-love comes from there. And it's the old story. Once you get that and you feel good about yourself and you start loving the world you're creating and you in it, you're really ready to turn that in someone else's direction and see if they're willing to work with you and be someone who loves you back.
That's very good, yeah. Do you have an example of this with a client, or even with your own life?
Well, my own life, absolutely. You know, when you counsel people for a living, people think you have all the answers, but they don't realize we come through these things too. And I can remember, you know, being that person who maybe went too fast and emoted too quickly and didn't get the information I needed. But once I got to doing those things, and honesty really became the best friend. So I, you know, when something happens, I don't feel the defenses. I just say, okay, let's go get that stuff. And if it, you know, it's a little uncomfortable, I'm okay. I started to do all that and realized that I'm going to do this every day in my life. There wasn't going to be some point I got to that I could be done with the program. You know, it's going to accompany. It's a gift. That's what the change and all these things that we're learning. They're gifts. So I keep applying those things, and I got to the point where I really felt good about the way I was doing things. I knew I was working hard, and I was enjoying the journey. That's the other key to this. This should not be a horrible thing that we think about. My God, I've got to go fix all these things. This should be, you know, a gift. That's something that comes into our life, and we can use every day and feel good about it. When I did that, the gratitude started to really come into my life, and I was really happy about the way I was living it. You know, you keep doing that and you keep learning, and then humility comes in the picture, and you realize that if you can incorporate humility into your life, humility keeps the learning process going, so you remain a student for life, and that's where wisdom comes from, because I don't think wisdom can exist without humility. And then you start, now you're in those, again, those higher order things, and I started to realize that all these things were working. I really liked the environment that I was creating around myself. I didn't have the ego that used to be there, and I liked the world, and I liked the way I was living it, and then you start feeling, you know, now I feel good. I can say I love myself, and I know why. Not just because I'm supposed to. I know why I'm loving myself, and that question was important for me. It wasn't just love yourself, it was why do you love yourself? Well, I've done all this work, and I've created an environment that feels real good. So now in my own personal relationships, that's what I can extend outward. And people are, when they receive that type of love to them, they feel very good about it, and they're willing to extend it back.
I love that. You know, one thing I might suggest from my own experience, I really can resonate a lot with what you're saying, Faust. And it's almost like when you begin to live life skillfully in this way, where you're in a thoughtful way, intentionally responding with thought and care, basically responding with love, right? And you're living life in a loving way, then of course things go well and you feel better about your life because you're in less pain, because you're managing your pain and dealing with pain and preventing problems and resolving problems. And it's almost like as you do that, then the negative feelings about yourself and others go away because you're resolving pain and conflict in a thoughtful way. Has that been your experience?
That's exactly what it is. You know, you it's a movement from being a person who feels negativity and uses things like envy and anger and those types of things to a person who doesn't have to do that, feels positive inside, talks to oneself positively, and then that's what you're extending outward, and you feel that it feels good. You and on all levels, you feel the difference. You know that positive energy creates in your life, and that's what you start living.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is well, one thing I would note is that that when you do that and you live in that way, that love just naturally emerges, right? It gets covered up by the pain, but when you sweep the pain away by leading a sort of a well-managed life where you're managing pain as skillfully as you described, then love naturally emerges. Isn't that amazing that that's the truth?
You know, and the nice thing about that, you know, we all want to love. Even in the early stages when we're conflicted, we want to love, but we're afraid. There's fear and what's going to happen. Am I going to be rejected? All those sorts of things. Then you get to this stage. Not only can you love, but you know you're doing it because your mind understands that, and you begin to love to love. So you continue to do it even more. That's the, when you get to that point, that's when it really feels good because you know you're doing it. You know it feels good, and it's almost like you can't get enough of it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Really, really beautifully said. So you wrote this book in 2019, is that right?
Yeah, we published it in 2019, yes.
2019.
And
you have a podcast as well that you do,
yes,
is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what else are you up to these days?
Well, I'm still counseling. I enjoy that. And so I'm doing that for a while yet. I'm going to start the second book very soon. I've been doing the research and setting the design down, and what I've decided to do was to take the Fix Yourself Handbook and do a Fix Yourself Handbook 2. What I see when people are making changes is that oftentimes they'll get to a point that they feel real good, they're loving it, and then they stop working with the program a bit. And they slip back. It's almost like, you know, the diet phenomenon. You know, I lost 100 pounds and I feel real good. Then I stopped doing what I did. So I like to take the second book and have it be something that says, okay, you've made all these changes. Here's what you need to do to stay there, because you know, we get people to positive places, but they don't know how to live there. They've never done it. So sometimes it gets challenging and they don't know where to go, and I want to try to provide some information to get them to that point.
Oh, that sounds nice. Sounds like it'll be a great continuation of this book that you've done.
I think so.
I really love a lot of the principles that you have in here about trust the process and learn to trust yourself and to love the journey of life and presence. You talk a lot about presence, about living in the moment, practicing presence, very much mindful approach to living, which is the basis of inquiry that you've mentioned. So
sure.
really, there's a lot of wisdom in here. You also have a chapter on forgiveness, is that right?
Yeah, it's a little different than what I thought it was going to, you know, as I started to write that, and I was looking toward forgiving other people so you don't carry the baggage and the energy, I thought, like everything else, how could forgiveness be a process that we're going to turn on someone else before we did it to ourselves? And I think we need to forgive ourselves for whatever we have done, and relieve ourselves of guilt and shame and those types of things. And once we can do that, going out and forgiving the next person, which we need to do so we don't have that energy, that becomes a much less.
Oh, this, yeah, it's beautiful. Well, there's a lot in here. What I see in this, it's kind of age-old wisdom and skillful practices for healing and growth and transformation that have been put into a lot of practical framework that is very, very practical and very, very, very helpful. So how can people learn more about you and get your book? Where should they go?
You can go to my website. If you can remember my name, it's faustruggiero.com. Type the Fix Yourself Handbook, it'll get you to the website also. The website is dedicated solely to the book. Chapter outlines are there, excerpts, all the types of things, media things, interviews I've done. They can get a lot of information, you know, and so you can start there. If you want to buy the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual retailers.
Great. Well, Fox, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our show and sharing your wisdom with the world. There's a lot that's very, very good in here, and I encourage people to check this out. Thanks, and be well in your work, and good luck with your next book.
And the same to you. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a wonderful experience.
Good to have you. Good. You're listening to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike and our guest, Boss Ruggiero. Stay tuned. I'll be right back after this break to finish our show for today. Welcome back to the How to Love Show with Dr. Mike. I'm Dr. Michael McGee, MCGEE, your host, and really glad that you could be with us today and listening to the show with Foster Ruggiero and hearing his wisdom. If you want to learn more about my work and my work on healing and growth and transformation, you can visit my website at howtolove.com. So yeah, so just really a lot to reflect on here about what Foss was talking about. I really love his slow down fact finding inquiry process. It really is so helpful to look in my model or my approach, attending with appreciation, right? And sort of the non-judgmental, careful inquiry, looking carefully at the truth of things, the truth of ourselves and the truth of others, the truth of our situation. He uses the term brutal honesty, and I would use the term as well, maybe kind honesty or rigorous honesty, but a deep inquiry. I was just finished a session with a patient where she's feeling better. She's still on some medication to help her with some mood instability, and really had grown up with a mother who was wounded herself and a father, and there was a lot of fighting in the home, and a lot of her mother inflicting upon her unintentionally a lot of judgment and negativity and criticism. She really felt that she grew up in it almost like in a battle zone that was very, very painful to see her parents in so much pain and distress with each other. She felt very unsafe, and she felt very judged and unseen. And whenever she was in pain or distress, her mother would essentially blame her and make her bad and wrong for her pain and distress. And it was very, very, very damaging to her in a way that led to addiction later on with cocaine and marijuana and a number of other self-destructive behaviors, and just a real sense of just an enormous amount of internal pain. So for her, it really has been a slowing down and fact-finding and really looking very deeply to see into the center of her woundedness and to deeply understand it and how it is manifesting itself in her current life, which is the work that she's been doing. But what's been difficult is now that she's feeling better a little bit with the medication that I've given her, and now that she's not addicting anymore and living life a little bit more skillfully and taking better care of herself, which is all really good, she's not really wanting to go back in and look at the traumatic past that she has. She would like to seal that over and just really not understand it more deeply because it's just so painful. So I think that in terms of healing completely, you really have to feel it to heal it. It's really, really true. And what she's done that I really appreciate in Foss Bergerio's work is she has also done this, which is to sort of create a life where things are stable, where she's living intelligently, thoughtfully, with some intention, and creating a foundation of stability, which would then allow her to go more deeply in and see the way these wounds affect her in the present day and how they are affecting her life and affecting her choices going forward. So that's one thing that I think that is so important, is to be able to really deeply understand these wounds and how they affect us, and to have the courage, really, the fierce courage to be able to go in and look deeply and understand these things and how they impact us. I think at the bottom of that is, as Foss says, is forgiveness, is really with a deep seeing and understanding of how things came to be the way that they are. There, with that understanding, arises a natural compassion for our pain and for the pain of others, and for, in a way, our lack of skill and ignorance and hurt, all of these afflictions that we all are born with and have to manage. And then with that compassion naturally arises forgiveness. And it's amazing that those things do happen in those ways through this deep process of inquiry. So thank you for being with us today. I hope the show has been beneficial to you and has deepened your practice in some way. I wish you a very good week of love, of practicing love in your life, and hope that you'll join us again next week. Until then, be well, and thank you for joining us. Take care.